This is Method Not Magic, the College Admission and Test Preparation Podcast. Hi, everybody. This is Ryan Blodgett from Marks Education talking with Anthony Cellino about different approaches to test prep. So we're going to be talking about self-study, taking classes, watching videos, doing practice tests, using books, and everything in between. So, Anthony, what are some of your experiences with different ways a person can prep for a standardized test?
Hey, Ryan. Yeah, so I probably have some experience with nearly every form of preparation you can think of. When I was in high school, I often didn't study for class, tests, and I still did very well. So I took my PSAT and my SAT cold. With pretty poor results relative to my grades. I did, for my second SAT sitting, crack a College Board book and took a couple of tests as practice, and that produced a marginal improvement, but nothing to be too proud of. So I had exposure to probably the two worst approaches, going in cold and taking practice tests with no guidance or direction. But in the years since, I've taught test prep classes in high school and separately with test prep company. And I tutored test prep one-on-one, and I've examined and written and edited many styles of test prep books for both SAT and ACT.
Sounds like there's a lot of different ways of studying for the test. Is there one method that's best for everybody, or does it depend person to person?
Yeah, so as with most things in education, the answer to that it depends on circumstances. You know, there's always a variance within a group, but one thing you can say is that a student will be better off with a directed plan. So one-on-one tutoring will likely produce better results than a large class, just because of the direction that can be gained by that. And a class can produce better results than undirected self-study. However, if a person is disciplined and clear-eyed about their strengths and their weaknesses, self-study with a well-designed book or just a really good plan can be a very productive method.
Let's talk a little more about that. How can someone use self-study effectively? Like, what kinds of things would they use? How would they set out to do that?
Yeah, you know, obviously that depends on the motivation of the student, but a motivated student with the right materials can go very far with self-study. In a few of the books that we've written recently at Marks Education, particularly SAT Total Prep and the ACT Math Workout, our mission was to, as much as possible, recreate the tutoring experience on the page. So we offered notes and topics and question type specific strategies like a lot of books. But then after our problem sets or our practice sections, we had comprehensive answer explanations that incorporated multiple approaches the way a tutor would. I tell my students that the best way to guarantee a top math score, for example, is to have and to sometimes apply at least two different ways of doing a problem, not doing the problem the same way twice, but actually two different ways. So books that help a student explore different methods and help them navigate which methods to use in which circumstances are much more effective for dedicated students than books that simply give a mock section followed by classroom style basic solutions.
Hmm. And I imagine as part of that, just having access to practice tests and doing some at the right times could make a big difference as well.
Yeah, I think getting the test experience has to be part of any self-study or any directed study. But it is a lot more effective when you start with some fundamentals in strategies and content, and not just do that thing that some test prep companies do where they just have a student take a test, go over the answers. Take a test, go over the answers. That might as well be a student doing it out of like a College Board book. It like I said, that has marginal improvement results, but not very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know one area I have a lot of personal experience with when it comes to this kind of study method and self-studying is using instructional videos. And that's something that we are kind of in a golden age of right now. There are videos out there that will help explain every topic under the sun. And some of them are very good. And it does take a little work to find which ones are the best and which are the most appropriate for a given topic. But that's another area where if a student is doing self-studying, they have a lot of potential to use some good resources. So for instance, we have answer explanation videos on our website that go as sort of a companion to our books. And there are other sources like Khan Academy that have video lessons that go along with practice questions and text lessons on a lot of topics. And I think for most students, being able to access the material in different ways can be really helpful. Having access to different methods, being able to learn something both by reading it and trying practice questions and by hearing someone talk about it and see a video on it, some combination, I find to be very effective for learning different kinds of topics. The hardest thing about them, though, I think, is just there is so much content out there that it can be very difficult for a student, even a motivated one working alone, to know what's going to be worth their time. You know, you could spend all day, every day watching instructional videos on relevant topics, but how do you know how much is enough, which ones are the most effective, which ones are short, but not too short, and so on. So they can be really helpful, but that can be hard to navigate.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that videos of all these methods that we're talking about, they're probably best used as supplements to the other methods. Because if you have a class or a tutor or a book that references the videos and tells you when to use them and which ones to use appropriately, that can kind of cut through a lot of the vastness that you're talking about.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, how about classes? How do you think of those? How do you feel about taking a class as a way to prep for a test like the SAT or the ACT?
Yeah, I think classes are great for introducing concepts or strategies, the foundational part of prep. And, you know, there's a drawback to that, which is that you can't tailor things the way you can one-on-one. But there are some benefits, too. I mean, sometimes the collective experience of the group can be leveraged in a way that makes it superior to one-on-one setting. When you tap into, like, common misconceptions that people have, that shared discovery of the group has a power for the student to retain that information that really can't be matched when they see that others have that same experience. I have an example. When I tutor certain difficult, confusing pronoun rules, right? Like the compound first person subject object, I versus me. I like to speak about this sort of collective experience we all have as kids, where we often misuse the me instead of I, when we say something like, Ryan and me are going out to play when we're 6 or 7 years old, and we get corrected by our parents. We get corrected so much that we make sure that we would always say Ryan and I, when in actuality, sometimes you're supposed to say Ryan and me. If you say Dan gave the book to Ryan and I, then you're saying it wrong. And it's funny because sometimes students have sort of never learned to sort of navigate that overcompensation that we have because we got corrected so early by our parents. But when we realize that, wow, all of us, all of these 16 and 17 year olds in the room, and sometimes adults, are making this same common error, and probably for the same reason, because we got corrected too much when we were kids, that idea sticks. It works with who versus whom also. Everybody feels like they're not using whom correctly, or that they never use it correctly. So they say, okay, well, I guess I'm always supposed to put whom because it sounds right. And all of the students have that same experience, but then they realize, oh, there's actually a rule involved here that you actually have to think about the subject and the object of the sentence. Then the fact that everybody has that experience helps them retain the rule, because then they go back to thinking about that in the class. Can't really recreate that exactly in a one-on-one setting. So that's where classes can be most useful. But once you get into the kinds of things where one student could benefit from more work on one thing and another student can benefit in a totally different area, that's when classes lose some of their effectiveness or just waste some time.
Right. I know one way I've thought about differences between self-study classes and one-on-one tutoring is that time effectiveness kind of category. You know, for the most part, you figure if a student is properly motivated, has the right materials, they can get most of the benefit from just working out of books and through their own materials, assuming good materials. But a lot of people don't have the kind of time it takes to navigate the field, figure out things for themselves, or aren't as motivated. And taking a class helps a little with those because people, you know, tell you a little more of what to work on, focus on, and you're a little more motivated by having a schedule. And one-on-one tutoring, even more so, and way more so, you know, then you're accountable to one person. It's entirely tailored to you, and so likely to be much faster and more time efficient, albeit more costly. Maybe let's talk about one-on-one tutoring a little more then. So we've been talking about one-on-one tutoring as kind of the gold standard when feasible. What is it about one-on-one that gives an edge compared to the other methods?
Yeah, you hit on it quite a bit just before. I think ultimately you have the most flexibility in one-on-one tutoring, and that allows you to be the most efficient with the student's time. You can use books and maximize all of their strengths when you're giving homework between sessions. You can assign the best videos, as we talked about before, the best video lessons, and revisit key ones, particularly in the weeks before a test. You can tell a student, you know, these couple of videos, you might want to watch them again, just to make sure you have that particular calculator technique down. And that's particularly effective right before a test, something they can watch even the night before a test. You can pick out the best lessons that you teach in a class and cater them to the audience of one. But most importantly, as a tutor, you can assess all those unique needs of that one student, exactly what you were talking about, and tailor each session to those needs. So that, you know, a lot of test prep classes may make an assumption that a student is, that all the students are very comfortable with something like factoring. Because in a class, you only have so much time and you're not going to take the time if you figure maybe two of the students have forgotten the fundamentals of factoring. But as a tutor, you can assess that and you can spend the time on that because that will be important for that student in their test prep.
In all of this, it seems that there's both a lot of room for families and students to make choices about how they get ready for standardized tests. How about we talk a little bit about specific ways of measuring what approach might be the right choice for a given student, and especially considering, I'm sure, the quality of each of these approaches can vary. You know, some books are better than others, some classes are better than others, and some tutors are better than others. So what are some things that students and families can use to decide between different methods and perhaps even different options within a method, you know, different books or tutors or classes?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's important to first, you know, take a step back and say, okay, well, people like to view things in terms of singular inputs and singular outputs, right? With test prep, it seems like the most common input you'd think of would be the cost. Cost of a book is relatively cheap. Cost of one-on-one tutoring can be quite expensive. Cost of classes can be as expensive. But there's a lot more involved. I think that if you realize that the relationship, first of all, is not linear. It's not like, okay, if I've done five sessions and gone up 100 points, that if I go up, if I do 10 sessions, I'll go up 200 points. That's important to realize that that's not what happens. It's not linear, and it's also not just X to Y. It's not inputs and outputs only, or not singular inputs and outputs only. The inputs you can think of as like the costs in a cost-benefit analysis, but they're not just monetary. There's the time that one needs to put in. We talked about how if somebody's going to do self-study with a book, there's probably a considerable amount of time that has to be spent just realizing what you need to use of the book or what you don't need to use within the book. There's also the stress on the student. That's a cost that I think people don't figure in very often. You know, frequently, one of the great, I guess, benefits, but also this weighs on the cost side of one-on-one tutoring is the transference of stress into confidence or relief that the student gets from just talking through things with a tutor. Those are things that are really hard to measure, but they're part of the equation and, you know, can be thought of as like a cost saving. Of course, the outputs, right? The benefits that a person gets from the way they prep, it can't just solely be measured by score improvement either. You have to think about the increased opportunity that gives. Obviously, that's generally why people are doing these tests, to have more choices for college, but all of the ancillary benefits that brings, including stress relief. Frankly, problem-solving skills. You know, one thing we don't talk about is that in one-on-one tutoring, what we don't talk about very often, one-on-one tutoring, we're talking about strategies for solving problems. I think colleges care way more that you know how to think on your feet, that you know how to solve problems, than that you know the amount of degrees in a pentagon. And in the tutoring that we do, and in some classes, and some well-written books, you come out saying, oh, okay, these are approaches I can use to a lot of things. They're approaches that are different than I use in the classroom, but of course I'm not going to be in the classroom my whole life. And when I've had a good experience as a tutor with a student, I know that they've taken something away from the lesson, hopefully something that improves their score, but just as hopefully, or even more, something that they can just use in their life. And then, frankly, there's a monetary aspect on the benefit side also. A lot of students can save a lot of money in merit scholarships that are based on test scores. And we've seen this happen hundreds of times with our students. So I think what's important is that you see the entire landscape, that you think about it in terms of what am I putting in and what am I going to get out? And those things are not just simply numbers.
That makes a lot of sense. I want to echo a couple of points you made about the issue of kind of stress and confidence on these tests. This is something that I found a little surprising whenever I started tutoring, because I was in a very similar situation to you in high school, where I didn't really practice for standardized tests before I took them. I didn't really study very much in school. School was really easy. And so whenever I started tutoring, the idea that these tests really stress out a lot of students, and a lot of people feel a lot of anxiety about them that affects not just their performance, but their happiness whenever they're working on these things, that was something I hadn't really considered ahead of time, but have experienced a lot in working with students. Maybe in the neighborhood of 1 in 4 of students I work with, we talk about test stress and anxiety to a significant degree, and it's something we work on, you know, working on coping strategies and skills and confidence building, and it's something we talk about explicitly. It's not just a side benefit. It is part of the goals of working on these tests, kind of demystifying and helping put a student in a better situation. And I think that kind of work often has beneficial ancillary effects. You know, students will sometimes tell me that they use techniques we talked about for a test in school, or for an AP test, or for a personal situation. And I think there can be a lot of benefits of this kind of prep work besides just the more obvious ones. And the second, about some of the cost-benefit analysis side, I think the thinking of test prep as an investment that pays dividends in scholarships is one that I think is an important one, and a lot of people maybe aren't thinking of initially. And we can think of a lot of test prep in general. You know, trying to get a higher score is at its essence about two financial things, about being able to get into a more selective college, which might result in a better education or a better job or a better life experience, possibly, and about having more access to scholarships, which make the whole thing more affordable. I actually, within the last week, had a student I found out they got a $50,000 scholarship to a college that before we started, they didn't think they were going to be able to get into. And so those kind of effects are, like, they can certainly happen. And, you know, boosting a standardized test score by the kind of significant amount that someone using these kind of preparation techniques really effectively can often achieve, that can have a really big impact on those kind of things, both in what school you get into and, like we're talking about, you know, how expensive it is. All right. So we got to talk about a lot of stuff and talked for a lot longer than we expected, but I think that is probably good because we got to go through a lot of good topics. Thanks so much for talking with me about different approaches to studying for these tests, Anthony. And everybody out there, thank you for listening. Definitely reach out to us at Mars Education if you have any questions or if you're interested in one-on-one tutoring with us. Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.